At some point is like just waiting 10 minutes for my computer to turn on. I'm like, oh, this thing turns 13 next month. Maybe.
Yeah.
Between that and the Windows 10 thing, it may be time. I was just hoping this shit would get affordable again one day, but it really didn't, so you know.
No, it doesn't.
$3,200 or whatever later.
Nothing is affordable. Affordability is a social construct.
Yep. Thanks, Paul Gart.
But that social construct held for a while, like when they bought this. Player 2 Pixelcast episode 169. I am your host, Tim Henderson. Unfortunately, apparently, Sarah's already... Okay, you haven't even been introduced. You're facepalming. I don't know, like...
Why did I turn up for the episode that ends in... Oh, God.
Because you're only here for nice things.
Yes. Yes.
You're too nice for anything else. We're going to try and be wholesome with the way that this works.
Yeah, well, that's... Okay, we'll go with that. We'll pretend.
Right. It's going to be really, really funny if it turns out the last time you were on was actually episode 69. It's been a while.
It has. But I have interrupted your introduction.
No, we can just roll with it. This explains your, like, very innocent when, like, Rob said nice before when I was, like, checking the episode number. Also, yeah, Robbie's here.
Hey,
Rob! What up?
I feel like, yeah, we've returned like to like the late days of Twitter before everybody like migrated across. I feel like that is when like it was peak nice jokes.
Oh, yeah. My Twitter is just, it is a hollow shell semblance of what it once was. Because I nuked that thing from orbit.
I just abandoned it and use it now to log into public Wi-Fi with.
Oh, that's right. You can do that.
I never intend to use this thing seriously again. Like, you can bombard, like, even a curated feed is going to be Nazi shit at this point, so it may as well.
Sometimes I use it to log in and see what the images are for the potential teasers for the next Yeti t-shirt that's being released that day.
Okay, that is hyper-specific. That is
hyper-specific, and I don't do it as often as I used to because, as we have identified, economy.
You can get past a couple of swastika bits of paraphernalia.
No, but also, who can afford t-shirts in this economy? Dear God!
Oh man, a friend of mine was talking about like, was it? They were at a gig recently, and it was like $60 for a t-shirt.
Mm.
Like the hell?
Yeah, it's insane.
Cool. I actually buy most of my clothes secondhand now, and it's like $5 for a shirt. But
yeah. As somebody whose household has now descended into K-pop demon hunters, the fact that there is no merch for it is really, really dangerous, but also really good for all the people who are really amazing artists and can put that stuff on t-shirts and make a mint. Because Sony did not think that through.
It could be pretty easy to roll the presses on like a couple of t-shirts as well. Like, just get Uniqlo on the phone and say, hey, we'll give you pieces of artwork to spin up the presses or whatever. Anyway, we are way off topic already. Speaking of,
indeed.
I guess shirts, fashion, it kind of like ties in. We're going to be kind of superficial this episode and just kind of see if we can like write down a nice 10, because you know that's how you might end up being 11, who knows, of like the nicest looking, just looking physical pieces of gaming hardware, console specifically, because we start to get into PC builds, it's going to be a never-ending nightmare. But yes, before that, you know, actual games themselves, and I believe that Sarah is like, I don't know, like embracing an inner Japanese preschooler.
I kind of am a little bit. So we will be immensely proud because I don't know the last time that this happened. It might have been at the last podcast that I was on, but I've actually completed a game
called Kabuto Park.
Kabuto Park, which is essentially. Like a whole bunch of those summertime kind of in Japan video games that are out, but it's just the mini game part of it, which is the insect fighting. And I have to really stress
that is really a thing that does happen.
It is essentially insect sumo wrestling on a tambourine. And your purpose during this game is to go to different habitats to catch different insects. And all the different insects have a strength, a defense, and an energy kind of stat. And similar to games such as Pokemon Go, if you catch too many of an insect, you can trade them in for candy, which you then feed to the insects that you choose to keep.
And they get stronger. So you end up with an army of ants, is what I'm hearing.
Yes. Or in my case, an army of... I had a shiny rosy moth. I had a Hercules beetle. And I had... Oh, I can't remember what the third one was. But I got a couple of nice little shiny beetles in there. And I just carry it. They just carried me through pretty much the entire game because I would just sit and hunt for random insects, trade them in for candy, hunt for more insects, trade them in for candy, and just keep, you know, leveling up the stats of my favorite three or four because, you know, you got to have
your favorites.
That's
how these games tend to go is, like, at some point you just gravitate to your build effectively and then...
Yeah, to your basic instincts of you need to get to the maximum point to see whether or not you have chosen the correct insect with the correct stat or if you need to start all over again. So it is kind of like that summer pastime kind of game. It is done in a calendar month, which is a month of August. And yep. On each of those days, you hunt for bugs, you can level up your bugs, you can feed them candy, that kind of thing. And you keep doing that until at some point in that day, you battle whoever the other kid is that you're going to battle that day. And once that battle has been completed and you've been victorious, it will then transition to the next day. So it is a fun little game. It is a stupidly fun little game. It's very simple, but I just kept going back to just keep getting more bugs and more moths and more butterflies, and they make me happy. And I completed it, and I managed to get, I think, all but three achievements out of it, which is very uncommon for me. So,
heck yeah.
So, yes, for anybody who would like, a very nice little... You could probably get it done in 10. I stayed on for longer because I, you know, just because I got addicted to catching all the bugs. It's a cheap little game on Steam. I would love it to come
out. It is a cheap little game.
It is, yeah. And the best part is with the actual bug catching, it's not kind of like you're sneaking up to them and then just kind of, you know, hitting with a net. There's an actual rhythm mechanic to it as well, where you have to actually hit the net in a kind of in a certain kind of green zone of the kind of rhythm area. And yep. If you get it right, then you catch the bug. If you get it wrong, then you don't get the bug.
Very
it is very straightforward. But each of the areas have a different mechanic. So some of them it's just like a straight, you know, here's the green line and your thing's moving and then you've got to hit it. And some of them they have like this weird kind of, kind of breathing mechanic where the green area expands, it gets smaller, it gets bigger, it gets smaller. And it's really cool. And in some of them, the green area keeps moving as well as your net keeping moving. And you sit there and you go, oh my gosh, how am I going to do this? But somehow you do. And when you do, it is wonderful.
I do appreciate your enthusiasm for this.
It is. It's simple and it's fun. And it's nice.
It looks so simple as well. It really looks like somebody's taken like a 386 game and like added a papercraft filter to it.
Essentially. And it's nice and it's sweet and it's very simple and it's cozy and it's kind. So that is my recommendation for anybody who wants to get anything completed before the end of September.
How okay, I guess it'll be a few days of September left when this goes live.
Yep.
So
it will take you like 10 hours. Like it will not take you long.
Anyway, Sarah's happy. Rob apparently not so much.
Yeah. So I've been playing a bit of this game called Formula Legends. I saw some people who do sim racing stuff sort of say it was all right. So I grabbed it. It's on everything, but I thought it'd be good to sit on the couch with it. So I bought it on PS5. It's basically an arcade racing game that wants to be a little more arcadey, focused on like Formula One. It starts off in the 60s. And sort of goes through all the eras to today.
Wait, Rob, I need to unpack your description because I don't know where the error was. You said it's an arcade racing game that wants to be a little bit arcadey. Is it an arcade racing game that wants to be a little bit simmy, or a sim racing game that wants to be a little bit arcadey?
Arcade that wants to be a bit simmy. Okay. So basically, and this is the crux of the problem, which we'll get through things. So basically, as what drew me in is it's got like that whole historical to modern aspect. It reminds me a lot of Art of Rally, which is a game I'm sure I've talked about before and I freaking adore.
Yep.
It's also got that, again, that arcade to a bit simmy thing. Like, I am not a – I like racing games, but I don't have the space or money for a sim rig. So give me Simcade, like Gran Turismo, that kind of thing is what I enjoy. But I love a good arcade racing game. Like, give me – if there's an arcade with a Sega Rally or a Daytona, I am very happy to play it. And so something a bit more kind of hits that sweet spot. And you start up, like I said, it's got the nice aesthetic, nice visual art style, really love it. There's a lot of cool things where, like, you have the set of circuits that you race on, all the eras. So as you play further on, you get to see the tracks upgraded to sort of more modern standards. Except I don't think I'll ever be reaching it because I'm not having a good time with this game at all. And this all comes down to the driving model. An arcade racing game should be very pick up and play. You should be able to pick it up.
Yeah.
You should be able to just get going, and it should be great to drive. Unfortunately, this game has very terrible steering. So basically, you know, I've got the gamepad in my hand, and I turn the thumb to corner. There's like this massive lag before pushing the thumbstick in, like to the side, and you start turning. And as soon as you let go, because you might want to correct. Like, you might be turning too much and you want to ease off. It just centers really quickly. And then it's sort of when you try to turn again, it takes an age to apply.
So it just does lag into the game design itself.
This is fundamentally the way they've programmed the input system, that they've just done a terrible job. And I was doing some poking around and investigating to see what other people had said. And apparently, this game had a demo off for its PC build, and people raised these as concerns with the dev, and nothing was done. It's how it felt when the demo was out earlier, and the dev just did not iterate on that at all. So that's really, I wish I'd known that, because it makes the game not fun at all to play. Like, I did the training. The training is like a modern day run around one of the courses, introduce you to all the mechanics, cool. And then I did the first race, which is a 1960s F1. You know, cars don't have much downforce. They're very light and sort of stuff. And it was going through, there's a section where you'd be going up, you turn like a 90 degree right corner and then 90 degree left corner. And so getting the line is very tough because of
just like, that's some Ridge Racer shit right there. You need in the controls.
You got to really anticipate it is the issue. Is it trying to kind of get you to anticipate the turn?
Maybe.
So you do that earlier?
Like, you have to turn earlier, sure. But it's the responsiveness. And because you can't just, like, ease off in the corner, like, and this is another thing that happens, is that if you cut too much of the corner in most arcade racing games, you slow down and that's it.
Yeah.
Here, you have a thing that they do in simulators, and I say you broke the limits. And if you're doing a qualifying lap, your lap is invalidated.
No.
Like, this is something I expect if I'm playing, like, a proper simulator, because that's fair enough. Because that's
even something like Gran Turismo, I could let that slide in.
Yeah.
But it's like there was a time when I was doing this corner and I actually cut a bit. And like, one of the mechanics it has is you've got the racing, sort of like the dark strip on the track that's sort of like the best line. And if you're on that line, you don't wear as much on your tires or fuel. And on one of the tracks I was playing at, that cuts very close to the inside. And so I went a little too far over. Track invalidated. And it's like, there's this game that there's a lot of things it does right, a lot of the character, a lot of the presentation, but the driving model is just that horrible that it's just no fun to play. Apparently someone was saying that it's best to play it with digital controls, so instead of using a thumbstick, mapping it so you're just using your D-pad. And it's just like
90, it just true 1995 experience, baby.
Yeah. But it's just like, I mean, I've played other racing games like that, and I just don't know. I just don't think fundamentally that the driving model that it has will still feel good on a D-pad. I'm really disappointed in this game because it was a pretty fair price. It looked really good, a lot of content and stuff, but it's just this one fundamental feature is just really, really off. And I don't know. Like
this
I
Mario clone would have been really good, but the jump button doesn't work properly.
Yeah. Like imagine going back to a platform game where like you're used to the way like a Mario game plays, all that freedom to move in the air when you jump, and you jump and your arc is fixed like the original Castlevania. Like no one will stand for that now. Unless you like it just frustrates me so much because there's so much love and attention put into the game. But this driving model is just no fun at all. Makes it no fun at all.
See, Rob, you should have listened to the Player 2 Pixel cast before you decided to pick it up.
Time paradox.
I've literally never heard of this before. So
It only came out a few days ago. And like I only heard about it because one of the people, like one of the racing sim people I watch on YouTube covered it. He's into a lot of like vintage racing sims of vintage cars and older sims. And he doesn't normally play those kind of arcadey games. And so he was talking about it really challenging to turn on one track. And I thought maybe it's just him not used to a more arcadey game or whatever. But it's like, no, the driving model is just such a mess. I should have taken that as a red flag. But because he's not massively experienced with those kind of simpler games, the point wasn't communicated as clearly, and I didn't pick up on it.
And now you're wearing your Activision Grand Prix cartridge T-shirt in Rebellion.
Yes,
it's not Rebellion. It's reassurance. It's comfort.
Yes, Grand Prix actually responds very nice because you have to on the Atari. Otherwise, you know, if you don't refresh, you're not updating the screen every frame. The screen goes blank.
It's his equivalent of a Squishmallow. Like just let Rob be Rob. He needs this.
All right, well, Rob, if you do want an arcade racer, I have a thing for you. It's called Sonic Racing Cross Worlds.
Okay.
The reviews for which dropped really early, and we don't have one because, I don't know, our review code arrived the same day that the reviews actually dropped. So.
Boom.
It makes it a little bit hard to get that out the door in time.
Is this the one, and I've heard some very interesting things about the advertisements for this one.
Is it this one where they're
kind of poking some fun at the new Mario Kart? Doing good old likely. Sega does what Nintendo don't, that kind of stuff.
Or in this case, they don't do what Nintendo does, which is to say you have a needless open world connecting all your tracks together.
Yeah, I didn't get that.
I mean,
that
these
either.
Sonic Racing games, they are effectively Mario Kart-likes, except, you know, Sonic characters and the carts look less like carts and more like actual cars. And this thing just comes out with an immediate burst of energy. It's opening cinematic with just one of the most terrible game pop songs I've ever heard in my life.
Oh.
Like, multiple refrains of the actual words Sonic Racing. It opens with lyrics like something about, like, Shadow being the fastest. I'm like, oh, man, this is, like... I remember the Sonic Adventure days where, like, it was cheesy cock rock, but it was still, like, fine for what it was. This is, like, so far down that we are literally just describing the shit that is happening on the screen. The melody is actually kind of, like, fine, which is just as well, because that becomes, like, a thing that plays in the background. But my god, I forget how bad the lyrics are in some songs. But, I mean, it's just, like, a statement of, like, cheese and chaos. In this game, I want to say, is chaos, like... need a chance to play this multiplayer, because obviously this is where this sort of thing shines. I've been playing a handful of things recently, among them, as I spoke last episode, of Silk Song. To say, in many ways, this game is meaner than Silk Song.
Ooh!
And
okay.
It just comes down to rubber banding. So the thing with Silk Song is, as mean as it is, you do get better. Like, you can, once you get better, you can do it, and you have control over that, and it's if you die, it's because you fucked up. Whereas I was getting frustrated playing this last night, and I actually used it 10 races, I took notes. It's like, how many times in the final stretch am I just getting bombarded with items and going from either first to down the pack? Or this game has an open rival system, kind of like what... So Mario Kart basically does this, I just don't paint it with. There's always somebody who will come first. So you have... Yeah. So either that or I will fall behind my rival. I mean, 10 races, literally half of them just got caned by items on the final stretch.
Oh.
And I'm like, yeah, this is, that's too much. That's too frequent. It's just a sample size of 10, but I did that because I'm going, is this like that, you know, the confirmation bias, like you always notice when you get red lights, but never when you get green lights. So I did write it down. And I'm like, no, this is a problem. This is too much.
I mean, does the group kind of like its Grand Prix, like four races per thing in it? So it's not incremental. It's like even on, you know, your Fisher Price, my first Sonic Racing lap, that thing that you do, it still decides, let's throw everything at you last lap because it's funny. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's
funny. I think it's just how the rubber banding is like designed to try and make it seem close. But like the thing is, it doesn't really affect your rival. So what you'll notice is like if you were second and you haven't caught up in time, then you're just going to keep on getting, and it's just going to be like this battle between everybody except for the person in first who never gets hit by anything unless it's you.
Of course.
Okay.
Which is like really frustrating, and gradually finding like ways around this. So a big key part of this, and they probably should have done some sort of mini campaign tutorial where it's got these kind of not license something plates. I've written it down somewhere where you kind of like basically have unlock up to six slots where you can kind of like just put like little boons in, like little perks, like like start with a boost or power, like your power slide charges faster.
Okay.
And learning to use those definitely helps, but even then, it still feels like a little bit askew. But that shit needs to be explained better. Because sorry, Sarah, I'll give it for a sec. But because this game is, I mean, yeah, whatever. I'm a 40-year-old ass man or whatever. But like, this game is going to sell to 12-year-olds. And I remember being a kid, and I don't think it's any different now. If you feel like the computer's cheating, that's not a great situation to be in. And it takes a while to learn.
Yeah.
In terms of these boons that you get, is it like unlockable achievements? Is it a, you know, random drop? Is it something that you have all of them at the start? And so you could just basically.
Yeah, you get them at the start. So you're kind of like decking yourself out.
Oh, okay. And you're still your butt handed to you.
Like it's gotten a bit better once figuring that out, but like it's like some of them are like almost like there's one that actually means that you take less or you recover more quickly from attacks, which seems almost essential sometimes.
Well, that last lap certainly. It's kind of if you've got something that where it's stacked that around, you know, at the end of each race, things are going to be just going to be massively more complicated. Then your best boons are going to be the ones that are in some way going to mitigate that. And that's what everybody is going to use.
If you skid out at the start as well, you're also, it's doable. I've done it once, but you're also pretty much screwed if you have a really bad start because you need to get. So it's like, I think it doesn't quite have the aggression of like some of the Mario Kart catch up items.
So it's got the thing like Mario Kart where if you time your start right, you get the boost. You time it wrong, you get.
Oh, it's a bit trickier as well because like if you start accelerating too late, you'll also skid out. Like it goes red, green, red, and then got that around.
Oh, that's just mean.
Yeah,
it shows it. Like you can visually see what's happening, but like if you realize like, oh shit, this is gonna happen. You don't let go of the accelerating time, then you just skid out, and that is a massive handicap. Like for like what should be a very like back and forth type thing, because I mean this is part of the genre. Like it definitely happens in Mario Kart. Like it's not far, but at least it's visible here. Yeah.
Mm.
But you know the frequency with which some of this happens feels a little unbalanced. It's a shame because like the courses are all like super fun, like very colorful, well designed, like crazy paths going off all over the places, cute little shortcuts, rings galore to like. Pick up the driving model does feel good. It feels good going around corners. The gimmick is actually explain what the gimmick is because in case some people don't know, which is you're effectively doing three laps, but the second lap is always different.
Huh.
Okay.
That's so cool. First, like two portals basically appear at the end of the first lap to choose a different part of track. So you'd be like going around some like speed highway from Sonic Adventure 2 like level, and then someone's like, I'm going to go through this portal, and next thing you know, you're being like lava and Chinese dragons for one lap, and then you like kind of go back to that. And that middle section like has some randomness to it, and like it can change up quite a bit, and it definitely reduces predictability. And you know, there's a lot of chaos in this game. I feel like this thing, that's good chaos. That is rad. And I expect, like, because I'm playing a review copy, this game still doesn't come out for, as of recording, 3 more days. Which obviously means, like, if I actually know it, only this earlier, a couple of hours ago, after updating, it didn't give me a fail to connect to network option. But also, I'm not playing for PlayStation Plus, so that doesn't matter anyway. But I do feel like this, because, I mean, as frustrating as everything I've said is, probably doesn't really matter if you've got, like, 3 other friends on a sofa.
Yep.
Yeah.
Probably doesn't matter as much if you're playing online. And in that case, I expect this game is excellent. I'm going to be very, very curious to see the delayed Switch 2 version. Making a big hoobala about this actually being all put onto the cart. It's kind of weird times we live in where we actually are not making you download the game that you bought physically is like a big hurrah thing now. Because obviously,
we're not talking about that. I'm still angry that they did that to Bravely Default. That was unnecessary.
Yeah, that was unnecessary.
That was very
interesting. It is weird because, like, there is an interesting story that came out of the apparently excellent in the end Star Wars Outlaws port, where like some of the developers came out and said, "Yeah, the cart speed read speed is not fast enough for our open world because the way this game was originally designed, like, it actually had to be that way."
Yeah.
Okay, but yeah, this is like very much a cross-gen game, I think. And it shows, like, there's some bits sort of visually spectacular, and then there are other points where it's like, oh, I can see the pieces being put together and, like, occasionally, like, super blurry textures. It doesn't really, even on PS5 Pro, I don't know if it technically really looks that much more impressive, if at all, than Mario Kart Switch 2 World.
Interesting.
It is a worthwhile game, and since World has not hit as hard as people were perhaps expecting. I mean, that said, Nintendo has plenty of time over the to figure out how to make more of that open world and probably just put in some DLC, which is more just tracks. But it'd be very interesting to see how this does land on the Switch 2, especially if like the port is of a good quality, because it feels like there's more of a chance there than Sega has ever had with one of these before.
Yep.
Fucking ballsy of them for like actually going at Mario Kart, though, when they're still putting it out on a Nintendo system.
I know. Is it going to be? It's not going to be cross-platform, is it?
It could multiplayer.
Because if you got to use PlayStation,
it's happened before. It has happened before. I mean, I don't know. Again, I haven't paid for PlayStation Plus in a while, so it's not.
Yeah.
Not some, because I am mostly either, if I'm playing multiplayer, I want people in the same room for the most part.
Yeah, and that's going to dictate the if it's not cross-platform, that's immediately going to kind of put your audience in certain silos.
Yeah, so, well, I mean, frame rate's going to matter. Like, if say the Switch 1 version, very likely, I don't know, but I'm guessing, very likely only runs at 30 frames a second, and, like, the current ones are at 60. That's just such a huge handicap.
Yeah.
Yep.
It would be worth not the Switch 2 one, but because it's being released on both, yeah. Ugh. That's a shame.
It's a pretty good game. It's just, like, getting, like, all that stuff unlocked is, like... It's like, come on, and if you're not going to make an interesting campaign, I'm just going to go through these things, don't fucking just grief me at the fucking end of things. Just let me unlock all this shit and then get on with it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, review incoming. Thoughts generally positive, but
review provided.
I mean, yeah, it also would have been nice if, you know, we had gotten the key in time.
No, look, if it's... I guess once it actually releases, the multiplayer is going to be the bit. So
again, you have to be paying
because if the CPU is the thing that's really making it not fun.
Yeah, because that rubber banding.
It's going to be. Yeah, it's a human variable. So it's once you get the human variable involved.
Yeah, it might
change your opinion a bit.
Excellent. If I could have a couple of friends over with some beers, I think this would actually be potentially a great game. As long as I can like talk them into playing it. Anyway, with that, we are going to take a short break, and when we come back, the fight will begin over which consoles look nice and which ones are... Yeah. We are back after me being frustrated with how Windows images have now changed, and I had to close like literally like 100 fucking images. I missed things working left and right. Mercifully, this is why. Maybe this is why I'm focusing on consoles after we did the PC episode last time. But we're being very superficial about this though, because consoles come in all shapes and sizes and colors, especially if you get to the limited edition shit. So we're just going to try and decide if we can actually make a list. I'm just going to take notes in Discord or something on what we think are actually the best looking consoles that you'd want displayed under or beside or near your TV or monitor or wherever the hell you happen to put them. I'm going to let Sarah get her 3DS stuff off her chest first.
Oh, gosh. Okay. So in terms of 3DS, and there are a multitude of different models and updates and variations and all the rest. And I'm going to put to you that I'm going to put the worst and the best. The worst for me is the 2DS XL. And the reason why is because those consoles have a dermatological issue. They all have so many different bumps and other little bits that have to be on the top and on the front of the case, and just to make them be a little bit different compared to the 3DS. And I just don't like the texture of that. Like, the console's nice, but I just don't like the fact that they all have to have this kind of weird textured idea to them to make them kind of different. Like, the Dragon Quest one, which is the Japan-only one, has that weird kind of, like, metal slime that comes out of it, and it just looks like a pimple.
We're not going to put more than one 3DS on this list anyway.
No. Nice, so I'm saying this is my worst. So this is the one that we're going, yeah, get over there, you sit over there in your pretty boxes, and you make us $1,200 in the future. Now, for me, the best version is definitely the 3DS XL in terms of form factor, in terms of it kind of took the idea of the original 3DS XL, and that one had a bit more of a rounded idea for it, and it still felt very kind of kiddy and a bit whatever, but the new 3DS XL felt a lot more sleek. And it also had a bunch of really interesting variations to it. And even if you got like a base model, even you got your metallic blue or your metallic black, you know, those still looked pretty spiffy. But for me, my personal favorite is the Super Nintendo edition of it. And the reason why is because it took the best parts of the new 3DS, which is everybody wanted that thing for the colored buttons that are on it, and they made it contextually relevant in a new 3DS XL design that reflected the Super Nintendo that we all grew up with, by and large, I believe. Maybe not Tim, but the rest of it did. And also gave us the colored buttons that we always wanted on the larger console. I will take no further questions at this time.
Yeah, I'm always torn over the colored buttons because I'm on and off about how they look. Like, functionally, I think they're helpful.
Mm. Yeah. I found with the other versions, they're black or they're just plain white buttons, and you're really relying on like the letters on it. And sometimes over time, if you're using a lot, those letters do wear a little bit. Having the colored buttons just, it appeals to my little millennial soul. So
there's a bit of nostalgia.
That's kind of where my heart is at.
Yeah, I really, can appreciate that.
In a vacuum, I actually don't hate the American one either, even though I'm not there's some subtle ways that something can go from ugly to not here, because I do not like the American Super Nintendo
design much
at all. Actually, I'm probably being a bit harsh. I think it's an unnecessary change. Like, why did you do that? I think.
But yeah, I don't understand what they made it. Yeah. The when they had the original 3DS XL, they tried to do like a NES version of it. And it was just printing like the NES controller on the top part of the console. And that looked rotten. That thing just looked ridiculous. So, and so SNES edition, Hyrule Edition would have been a close second because it's probably one of the nicest Zelda Edition consoles that are out there. Some of the later ones for me are really hit and miss, but the SNES Edition for me is it's a good color. It's a little bit more matte. It's not as, you know, not as shiny, and it has a really nice kind of different color buttons in the
on the actual. Up and down about how I think about shiny here, because am I thinking about like how it looks if I put it in a display case, or how it looks if you actually use it?
Yeah,
the shiny is great until, you know, you've owned it for a month.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep. Especially if it's on like a black color, because like I have that midnight black 3D new 3D SXL. That's the one I got, and and start picking up fingerprints easily.
Spray it down and wipe it like every.
Yeah.
Whereas if it's in a display case the whole time, that ain't going to be much of an issue.
I do like that there's also character to this, because I'm going to throw this out there now that I'm just going to like maybe just slash things instead. The whole Wii and original DS models, I kind of just want gone from consideration. I remember thinking the Wii looks nice when it came out, and now I'm like traumatized going, oh my god, this was like the milquetoast era of Nintendo.
Yeah.
Like that, and like, I was just thinking like, I was so fucking happy that Super Mario Wonder came out, because remember like 2D Mario just became the most bland shit for a while.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
It felt so cookie cutter.
And then they went crazy wild, and everyone was like, oh wow, this is great.
Yeah. It was good. I agree. I'd say Wii's out. It was nice in terms of how it stood out in that generation, but at the same time,
following a trend, I can live without pale gray logo era Nintendo as an aesthetic.
Yeah. That white Nintendo era aesthetic was interesting.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
No, I think it's aged really poorly.
Yeah. The original DS was pretty ugly
as well.
Yeah, the light is better, but it's still bland.
It's so bland. It is I'm the boring person who wants to keep things like fairly minimal and simple and sleek.
Yeah,
but the new 3DS, sorry, 3DS Lite is like so inoffensive that I'm offended by it. I think it's like,
yeah. The DSi had that similar kind of matte finisher, and you get like a black, very neutral colors. And then they did the DSi XL, which had like that burgundy kind of color, but it also had this really brilliant yellow. It was very reflective, but it had the brilliant yellow, and then which had like the black interior, and it was like a yellow stylus that went with it. And that thing was weird, but that was probably my only one in there. Like everybody, you see all the girlies have your pink and your mint kind of colored DS lights. And those things in terms of color do not age well. They get really kind of, I don't know, I don't know what it is, but they just
I want to do keep this to a certain degree of like what it was like at the time, because like Super Nintendos are all yellow now, but like it was decent enough looking console at that time.
Yeah.
Although going back in time, like Rob, if you had to choose one, let's say pre 16-bit machines.
Yeah. I'm going to say, I think I'm going to go off the PC Engine Core graphics.
Rob, always going to choose something that I need to like go and double check up on.
Yeah, so the Core graphics looks like the original PC Engine, but instead of being like white with the red accent for the logo, it's grey with blue, like sort of a light blue for the logo.
The logo does look nice in this color, actually.
Yeah, I really like.
I don't know how a machine looks, but I dig this blue. Like it's retro and kind of modern at the same time in a weird way.
Like it was sort of like the second iteration of the PC Engine, and it just like looks really. I just like the way that combination stands out, because they later did a Core Graphics 2, which has orange instead of blue.
Doesn't look as good. This is European Dreamcast beats Western Dreamcast, is what was beats NTSC Dreamcast.
Yeah,
I'm shortlist that just because I like the logo color. That's perhaps not the greatest reason in the world, but
that's. Look,
I'm not even looking at the correct one. I bet I'm not.
Do I have a quick, worst case, I can see if I've got a photo I can drop in Discord.
Yeah.
Personally. One that's there, I think this is where I started to learn, like, things can come in different colors and whatnot.
Looking at the two next to them, there was the darker one with the blue logo, and then there's the lighter one with the orange logo.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that No, I agree. The blue one's gorgeous.
The blue logo looks nice.
Yeah,
it's something about a shade of blue. Like maybe it's just the current year in time, and 10 years from now, we'll all be like, "What were we thinking?" But...
Yeah,
you know, that's definitely like a favorite of mine for a bunch of reasons. I haven't got one. Yeah. I don't have one.
The font is timeless. to be fair, like that's.
So it's Arial or Times New Roman.
No, it's a serif font, but I just can't pick it. But it's not attempting to be classy, but it's like it just feels kind of like it would go with like an English Oak Entertainment unit and wouldn't be out of place. That's kind of my vibe on that.
All right. I've drawn a page link in the in the chat.
Nice.
That's got it with the CD unit, but we don't care about the CD unit in this case.
Yeah. No. Which
console have we ever cared about the CD unit?
I left like expansion things off. I'll put this out here is that I'm torn. There could be a first place. If you could take the Mega Drive 2 and the Genesis 2 and smash them together, you would maybe have the best looking console ever.
Ooh.
The Genesis logo is really ugly, but the Genesis 2 has black buttons instead of red buttons.
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Because I got the Genesis 2 Mini because I couldn't get the Mega Drive 2 Mini. Had to import that. I really hate the Genesis logo. I don't know what Sega of America
would. The Mega Drive logo is so good.
Yeah.
Mm.
The Mega Drive logo looks great, and the Mega Drive 2 is an inferior machine to the Mega Drive 1. But like it's nice, like Scott Casari's symmetry is beautiful, like it's kinda like flat, it almost has a sports car thing without going over the top.
Mm.
And you replace those red buttons with black ones and you've just got this really weirdly modern looking.
Yeah. I'll give you that. I generally personally prefer the Model 1 Mega Drive, but I think Model 1 like technically Japanese Mega Drive over a PAL one, but yeah, I'll give you that for the Model 2.
Don't get me wrong, if I had to have one hooked up to a CRT in my house, I would go with a Mega Drive 1 because it is a superior machine. Hmm. But like, I'm pure aesthetics.
Yeah, aesthetics. I'm like, I can acknowledge that. Yeah.
But I'm going, even though I would like the black buttons, I'm going with Mega Drive 2 over Genesis just because I hate the Genesis logo and how big it is.
Yeah.
I'd agree. Mega Drive 2, like the Model 2, it just feels a little bit more. Yeah, I agree. The symmetry on it is really nice. The controller is weird.
I've come around more on the controller over time. I remember not liking how it looked at all when it came out because I just thought the Mega Drive 1 controller looked badass. I don't know, maybe it does. Yeah. It was too big for my child hands at the time, actually.
Yeah. The Mega Drive 1, the original 3-button pad is too big for my hands now. I much prefer that smaller. But I love I've got the Retrobit reproductions that they did that are licensed, and I've got a transparent blue, like this sort of like that light blue, and it looks chef kiss.
Nice.
I really love those keeping things controllers.
A bit retro and something that was very much of the time. Take the temperature. And how did we all feel about that clear, transparent Game Boy that was like, they released multiple colors, but everybody just bought the transparent one.
I never liked it. I'm
literally super up and super down on it.
Yeah. See, I like transparent with a bit of color. So when I bought my first GBA, I bought the Glacier, which was semi-transparent, like bluish.
Mm.
And that was, that's I really liked. Like, I like that a lot more than a solid color. I don't mind that kind of thing. But yeah, straight transparent, like straight see-through with no color tint on it, nah.
I agree. Like, if it's sometimes you get, like, it came with, like, there's ones that came with, like, a purple tint. I don't know if the Game Boys came with a purple tint. I don't remember. I feel like
Nintendo 64, because it was that era, and the Dreamcast did it as well. This was the whole iMac era of, like,
did the transparent controllers for the 64, didn't they?
I think they did whole consoles like that as well, actually.
Oh, yeah. Mm. Yeah.
You won't need to get Rob now. It's like a picture of that blue transparent Hello Kitty Dreamcast. That's...
Nope.
No.
Because that is a real thing. In terms of like just cutting and slashing a bit more, I did bother to download a picture of the original Xbox.
No.
No.
God, no.
No, I
God,
just no. In terms of cutting
Microsoft, shutting. Microsoft and good industrial design is like military intelligence. It just doesn't go together.
I will do an exception to that. And that would be the Xbox Series S. Because I think the only reason why they designed that is so that they could get the mock-up boxes in IKEA.
I would actually go a step further and say the Xbox One X is actually one of the nicest looking consoles.
Okay.
Or the tower one.
Mm. No, not the Series.
Or the One X. No, not Series X, One X.
Xbox One. They went from a disaster to like this really sleek, just slightly askew, but in a way that kind of worked. Like very compact, nice, just tight matte black, inobtrusive logo.
Xbox is more known for the matte black. Like they did the shiny black with the 360. Like,
I will give 360 points as like the most improved.
Mm.
Like if you go I'm putting the 1X on the list unless somebody's going to like fight me on it.
No. I'm good for 1X. I'm going to triple check that my memory's correct on that.
Yeah, I can concede with that. I mean,
yep. Yeah, so yeah, my idea of like the black or the white?
Well, the 1S was white and the 1X was black.
There's a white version.
There may have been
1X.
A white one. I think, yeah. I mean, I'm generally going to bias the black over, over white. I feel like that's also just a safer timeless thing as well, which is maybe a little bit boring, but.
Hmm.
Hmm.
Also, when we have to probably like fall on it, I'm less fond of it than I thought it would be, which is the original PlayStation.
See, I love the PS1, like little baby PS1.
The original, it looks like a PlayStation is featured in Lilo and Stitch. Like somebody stuck a straw in there and just went like pulled out the edges.
It's like blew it up like a balloon.
Yeah, it does. It looks like if there was a in helium balloon PlayStation, it would look like the PS1.
I mean I love that, but that's what I'll be honest, I have that sitting next to me because I had it from when I had it set out last. Whereas the original has that sort of look to it, but I think I just like the PS1 a little more because the size makes it cute. But
it is cute. I'll give it that. But I mean, I'm not really that fond of all of them. Like the original PS1 at the time was like, wow, this is like different and like and kind of cool, but. I don't know. Actually, I think the Saturn, the Western Saturn actually looks better now than the PS1 does. I don't think any of that generation's machines are like that super good looking though.
No. Not fair. Yeah, because I have more like the Model 2 Saturn. Japanese Saturn with the, you know, which is the one with the like the pinkish eject. And then the shots you uploaded. Mine is yellowed a bit, but I like the look of that. But yeah, nothing that year, I think, that gen.
Yeah, none of them really stuck. Although, definitely came around more on the PS2 as time went by. I thought the thing was ugly as shit when they unveiled it.
Yeah, I kind of like it's got, there's a bit of that, like, Y2K sleekness to it. And the slight, you know, the slight overhang of the upper section. I kind of like that. I like the slim as well.
I'm 50-50 on the slim. Like, I like the slim, but I always felt the slim is just really... It feels too weirdly delicate.
It looks like I'm going to break it, and I don't know why.
Yeah. I can see where you're coming from on that.
Yeah.
Although I appreciate that it's actually slim as opposed to what passes for a slim PlayStation console these days.
Yeah.
But I could put the PS2 on there, like, and I'm probably not going to fight for the Dreamcast, and that's breaking my heart a little bit.
Well, if it's I mean, the PS2 is that, like, at the moment, we're really going towards a lot of stuff that's quite angular. So it seems like we're kind of going towards
the Mega Drive 2 is fairly rounded, actually. Like, it's boxy, yeah. But it's...
So, well, yeah, the Mega Drive 2 is probably the exception. I don't know if it's controversial or not. I would go PS2 over PS3.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm not a fan of PS.
I actually liked the PS3 when it came out, and I've backed away from it since.
I have trouble knowing where to how to place it. It's just it takes up for me. It just in the current space economy of a household, it feels a bit much. And even I hate that latest like revision where it has like, you know, the
big
little kind of
top. The middle one was has aged okay, but
yeah, the middle one was good, but the sliding top thing,
I would put the PS2 above it, and I would definitely put the PS4 above it. That original PS4, when they unveiled that, is like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
I think the original PS4 has to be on there. Actually, the 20th anniversary edition of the PS4 has to be on there.
Okay, I would agree with that.
And here's where it gets really controversial. I actually think PS5 looks stupid as shit. The anniversary PS5 Pro looks fucking fire.
I don't like either. I don't like really a lot of the PS5 design in general. I don't like the revision that they've done.
Original PS5 Pro, like it's that. Especially
I don't like the revision. I don't like because it just feels oddly tall, and I don't like it. I prefer the PS4 over the PS5.
Just PS4, I think, is fantastic. But take a look at the anniversary PS5 Pro. It actually looks
fantastic. I've looked at it, and there's a reason why I did not buy it, sir, and that's because I looked
probably
at it and
went... Probably because it costs $1,000 I'm going to actually put down as the main reason.
If I had $1,000, I would still spend it on something else. I don't know. It just didn't do it for me. The PS4 had an anniversary version.
Yeah.
That one I was more across.
Yeah, I've just got that. I've just looked at that now in the drive, and that looks... I like the look of that. I mean, I kind of like the PS4 Pro having the third layer.
Mm.
But and that might be oddly specific. But yeah, I definitely love that PS4 design. Like that angular...
No, that original one was like, I don't know why they broke away from it. Like the slim PS4 just doesn't look...
Yeah, because
nice
it has the weird
magnet bit anymore, but
yeah. No, sorry. I like the anniversary version of the PS4. I like 10 times better than the PS5. The anniversary edition of the PS5. I don't like. I think that thing feels ugly to me.
Yep. Yeah, I do not like the PS5 at all.
And they really look
like visually.
Yeah.
Like, I've got an original one, so I haven't got the...
No, the original design I hated, although gets notably better. Like, a part of it is, and I learned this fucking, like, choosing colors, like, the outside of a house.
A
big part of it is, like, just how hard that black-white contrast is. Just looks really, really stupid. You replace that shell, it still looks dumb, but it immediately looks noticeably better.
Yeah.
I don't know why they're leaning so hard into that.
I've put a gray dust cover over mine.
I'll have to save this.
Not to protect it, but out of shame.
partly to protect it, and partly because it just throws off the balance of the room, sir. It just PS4 at least was a little bit shorter and a little bit inoffensive, and you had some options about which way to sit it. But
the Xbox at least agreed. The current Xboxes at least like work with furniture or cabinets.
PS4 did that too. So PS5 is a statement, piece. And sometimes that statement is,
I think we all agree the original PS5 design is super, super fucking dumb.
Yeah.
The collar is just too popped. The thing is gigantic.
Yep.
Probably on my own island, but I still think the Anniversary 5 Pro looks legitimately nice. And if they made that thing in straight black or if I buy a shell for it,
Mm-mm.
It'll stand up Still annoying that you can't stack anything on top of it. I kind of appreciated that about the PS4, that like you could make it part of a natural center properly.
The controllers look good though. The anniversary controllers.
The anniversary DualSense controller looks great as well, actually, but that just may be like a hard melting. Wonders. Something it doesn't look as good as I wanted to remember it is the PSP. I remember that thing looking so fucking sleek, and I'm like, it's just like weird buttons and like marks and shit everywhere.
PSP or Vita. And that's one I
actually like the look of now more.
I agree, and it's kind of like it feels to me that it was like the sleekness of that kind of form factor that I feel like is more emulated in the Switch 2 than the Switch 1.
Ooh. Yeah, the Switch 2 I think we could actually put on there. I think that matte black is really nice.
Because I think, and I was talking before about this, is that the Switch 1, the level of customization that you get with the Joy-Cons was great. But I'm wondering if the Switch 2, in its level of uniformity, is actually going to lead to more variations of like color of the entire console uniformly.
Once they make a more affordable family friendly
version. But like, you know, will they move towards, you know, not like a bright red Mario edition, but will they move towards, you know, a glacier white? Will they move towards
They actually did a bright red Switch, didn't they, for Mario, come to think of it. So it's not entirely
I can't remember if they did it inclusive of the tablet.
I think the tablet was maybe still black, but
yeah, and that's the thing for all of them. It's like it's always the Joy-Cons that have had the variation, but the tablet's always been black. I'm curious with the Switch 2, because they've made the Joy-Cons the same color as the console, if their idea is that they're going to have the tablet and the Joy-Cons uniformly one color in order to make their variations.
Go out and do a golden one for the next Zelda.
Oh dear God, no! The Switch Lite, the Switch Lite Zelda edition was ugly as sin. That was the worst Zelda edition of any console that I have ever seen ever, and there's been a few, and that one annoyed me the most because it didn't have like the back design just didn't have that level of regalness that really, you know, if you want to have your Hyrulean crest, that really should be there. It annoyed me so much, and I'm so glad that I didn't buy it. I'm so glad, because I could have and I didn't. But the Switch Lite is a little actually, you know what? Switch Lite and PS Vita.
I would take Vita over kind of Switch Lite.
I agree, I take Vita over Switch Lite, but I see the level of kind of
Vita. I admit I had PSP 1000 on my list because I've just been messing around, and that's sort of, there's a nice heft to it that sort of echoes that early 2000s thing. Mm-hmm. But then again, I've also been messing with, because I've that in a 3000, and I just loved that. While I don't like the UMD drive on the 3000, I do like how nice it's just towed around in my backpack. So I've just had that in my backpack for the last little while because I've been thinking of PSP, having done stuff celebrating that a little while ago. But I think Vita, I just love the Vita D-pad is just amazing.
Yeah.
Over any PSP D-pad.
It's weird though, when it comes to, because I remember when the Vita came out, I was not that impressed with how it was physically. I thought it was like kind of a little bit too chubby and maybe too rounded. But like looking back, I'm like, because I also thought the PSP was like the slickest shit in the face of the earth when that thing came out.
Yeah. It is funny how opinions can change.
Yeah.
Although something that I never owned, maybe going to be one more for Rob, like the Neo Geo.
Ooh. Yeah, like I've only seen pictures of an AES. So I've never seen one in the flesh.
No, because none of us could have afforded it at the time, even if we knew what it was.
I mean, I love the look of that joystick.
I think the whole package just looks.
Yeah, it looks. There is a sleekness to it, a nice angular
visual build quality there that you don't see in console that era as well. Like, no, it's something I would like to see it in.
Yeah, I mean that is beyond. You know, that's what they could get away with, basically being such a premium product. It's definitely like the AES. I
I'm never going to see one in the flesh. I mean,
come to Japan, go shopping, you may be able to, like, see one in Akihabara or something.
You'd find 11 million Famicoms.
I'm going to shortlist a Neo Geo to someone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the Famicom is kind of
Famicom,
tweety. Famicom,
I like it because I like it because it speaks toy.
Yeah,
it really
and
does.
It, and it unashamedly does that.
Yeah.
It doesn't try to kind of age up or sophisticate to another market. Wii U kind of still wanted to appeal quite, you know, at a mass level. Famicom looks like very, this is a toy. This is a toy that your little kids are going to play with and maybe have a hashtag good time.
Yep.
I like it for that reason.
Red plastic was the cheapest one at the time. And you could really tell that's why they chose it.
Yeah.
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 Mm. See, on the other hand, I actually kind of still have, even though I never owned one, have a soft spot for the NES. Just because, and this is going back when I was in Austria a month and a bit ago, and sending Rob pictures from this random ass retro game museum. And the NES is like the pinnacle of something I realize we've kind of lost from consoles now. It's like just very mechanical, like just flips and switches and things that go up and down, and like just the nice, just satisfying snaps and clicks of shit.
I mean, that was why one on my list was the original version of the Atari 2600, the 6-switch. The photos you have were the next one, the 4-switch, but the original machine had like all 6 switches on the front, the power, TV, the difficulty switches, selected reset, and all these nice like silver little poles. And there's a nice feel to them going through, like just touching those when you're changing what game you want, what game variation you want to play, or flicking those switches. And when I went to the 4-switch, putting the difficulty switches on the back is just little simple sliding switches, lost a bit of that. And then it was even further lost when they moved to the Junior, which is the 2600 version I grew up with. But that original, the original wood grain 6-switch from like 77, 78, there's something special to that.
In terms of kind of it being tactile, that makes sense. Like the Nintendo was good for kind of, you know, you have your, you really have to kind of, your interaction with it was very, you know, put down, put the cartridge in, smack it down, smack the thing down, press it on.
Yeah.
But it was like, that was, it had like, and I guess Rob, you'd be able, like with the 2600, like those, all those switches were to kind of change a whole bunch of different things on there. Like it did more than put a cartridge in, turn it on.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Like one of my favorite games on the 2600 is a game called Space Shuttle, and that's a simulation that actually had a little overlay that sits over that area where the switches are. And you had to like flip them when you're playing it. You're playing it off the stock joystick, which is a single fire button. And you've got all the, you interact with those switches to change systems and stuff. The coder of that game did an amazing job of just using everything to interact with it in that way for a machine, you know, that was designed to play Pong and Tank.
For me, and as somebody who has not played it, but somebody who could imagine how satisfying that would be, I would say 2600 over the NES.
Are we actually going to have a wood panel in here?
Yes. Mm. Have the wood grain.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, yeah, that's an added bonus. But, yeah.
I think if it was real wood, that would probably go a lot further.
Yeah.
Oh, it's.
But this
it's
is the 1970s of the consumer device. You're not going to get wood. You weren't getting wood paneling in cars. You're going to get.
Yeah, that's true.
Those fucking those station wagons there. That
my
wasn't
TV
real wood.
Toy has wood paneling and your car has a vinyl sticker on it. Although we never actually really touched on this NES, does anybody feel strongly about it?
Yes.
Yeah. Sorry. I like the PAL, the Super Famicom PAL SNES. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love the cartridge action is so satisfying.
Mm. This is probably my fault for talking about like the fun of the clicky and the mechanical and levers and shit, but it is still basically a room aesthetic more than a.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. For me, it was my first at home console that I had. But I mean, we had the Game Boy first, which we shared. But that was the first one that was like, you know, big bro sat down for Christmas and he said, said to mum, can we get a SNES? And we got a SNES, and we got Mario World. And my brother got really angry because we didn't get Street Fighter 2, but it was because I was too young.
Ah.
And video game classification. Woo! But no, I loved it. I hate that I gave it to my second cousins, and they most likely destroyed it. Like, no. I should have.
We all have done shit we've done with it.
We've all done. No, the parents have done.
Gave away most of my Master System games, I think. I wish I still had those. Like,
yeah. But if you had to choose in terms of the initial generations of the Nintendo console, so if you had to go between NES, SNES, 64, SNES for me would be top.
Yeah, 64 is aged really poorly. I remember thinking that was kind of sleek at the time as well. I'm looking at it now going,
it was an interesting design. But it was, and it had that same kind of like, you know, cartridge at the front and everything. The controller just it wasn't it, like, you know, in terms of,
it is a PlayStation 5 of controllers.
Yeah.
It's just a gigantic statement piece that,
yeah.
Yeah. So I love
the Cube controller a lot more.
Actually, how do we feel about the GameCube? This is one where my feelings like bounce around the place on, because it walks a fine line between toy and technology.
It's getting back to the whole idea of the Famicom being very, you know, trying to engage in the toy aesthetic.
Yeah.
The colors change the cube a lot. Like a black cube and a purple cube and an orange cube all have like very different, like more so than most consoles when they change colors.
Hmm.
I mean, I love the cube aesthetic, but, and I grew up with a black, like I bought a black cube.
Mine was purple. That was like a rare case where I didn't go for the more generic color.
It was the one generation that I missed of the Nintendo consoles, definitely.
It's the one that a lot of people missed, I think.
I know. But it's the... I don't know. It's... For me, I feel like there needs to be something on that list that really captures that essence of kind of childhood glee and toy, and probably for a lot of listeners for this podcast, the Famicom wouldn't be it. The Famicom, you would see it and you would just immediately think Fisher Price, my first console. GameCube still does a bit of that. You know, but if you it's well, ratio also of
you
look toy-
like you don't have a 3-year-old in the house.
Yes, at times. Yeah. At times. The
GameCube on there, or at least in the short list. We just need to choose a color. Are we going black again, or are we going purple?
We have to go purple.
You gotta go purple.
Yeah. You have to go purple.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's my GameCube.
And it just, it has, like, the GameCube logo was purple, so.
Yeah.
Mm. You gotta go purple. It just makes sense. Yeah.
All right, so I'm going to just slash the Wii U out. That is like the most uninteresting looking console ever. It's like this weird log.
Oh gosh, it is like it's like one of those log cakes that you get. It's that.
Yeah. Just has been squished.
Just squished you.
It's like somebody sat on it on the way over.
You brought it to the work Christmas party, and you forgot that you had it. In the same bag as your laptop, and that is the Wii U. And you bring it out, and everybody tries to go, "Oh, this is lovely and whimsy," but they're also utterly internally destroyed and disappointed.
I mean, it kind of gets away with it because, like, I guess a part of a console's aesthetic is actually the controller. In the Wii U's case, that is actually what took the visual stage. Like, that was what you would have seen.
That was a statement.
But that screen just looks dwarfed. Like, it's just like the biggest bezel in the world now is just what it looks like.
Yeah, and it doesn't hold charge for love nor money. I only have mine for one reason and one reason only, and it's the most horrendously pathetic reason I've kept it. And that is because I like to revenge play Animal Crossing Amiibo Festival.
Okay.
I don't know why.
You do you, Sarah.
It's just this weird thing that every so often I'm like, I've got a whole heap of Amiibo, Animal Crossing Amiibo. Let's just do this. Why not? And myself and the kid, we will sit and we will, you know, spend 45 minutes always playing the October map because we always got to collect all the candy. But it's just this weird kind of random thing that we always come back to. And that's the only reason why that thing's in my house.
All right, to try and wind this down, do we have any last thing that we want to, like, at least give, like, mention to before?
Game Boy Advance. Not the SP.
Looking things, don't you? That's the theme I'm noticing.
Do you understand the moment in my life that I'm in right now? Like, my entire house is full of toys, sir.
And yes, you must see more of them.
Yeah, but it's... It has its, it like if it complements the GameCube in terms of color. Yeah,
I would say.
But it's an honorable mention. Like, you know, there are other things that are 10 times better than that, in my opinion. But if we had to talk about the Game Boy Advance models, that
getting
one,
to like a weird consideration like for handheld consoles with me. Is that some LCD screens, you turn them off, they're just this super pale gray. It's a problem with, like, the original Switch as well.
Yeah.
It's not a problem with the Vita OLED screen. Like, just looks black. And all the clamshell stuff it's not a problem with because, like, you don't see the screen when it's not turned on.
Yeah.
But it's really an issue with the original Switch and the Game Boy Advance and the original Game Boy. Well, the original Game Boy has this cool retro green thing all the time anyway.
Oh, yeah. It's kind of neat. And you got to shine a light on it to play it.
Hey, Rob, do you want to name one out of the console like half of us haven't heard of before?
Yeah, go for it, sir.
I'm looking at my list and I like...
give me something to Google! Come on! I believe in you.
Maybe not, huh? While Rob's thinking, I'm just going to give my last shout-out to when I learned that there was more than one color. Color's a strong word. But like the actual full black Sega Master System 2. Actually looked like surprisingly nice and clean. Like our original one had that like blue gray on the top, and that eventually broke. We got this, the one that we bought to replace it was just all black. I'm like, oh, wow, this is like an affordable Mega Drive almost. That's like grossly simplifying the design. It was also just like part of the system logo. That's a very 80s shade of red brown that maybe isn't the best color they could have used. But the rest of the console looks pretty nice. And again, on that physical thing, like I like that you like they actually had like that lid that you would open up to like, you know, and then the Mega Drive, they figured out what if we just have a hinge plastic and then you didn't have to do that. Well, I think we've drained Rob, unless he's going to go say Atari Jaguar or something.
I will throw it.
We're at 10. We're technically at 10.
No, the list is full. The list is actually full. So, like, this is really just, like, an honorable mention.
I'll say the Amiga CD32 because it's in the list of the things. And it sort of riffs on the Mega Drive Model 1. So, like, what if the Mega Drive Model 1 but flipped around?
It could actually look pretty good. I mean,
It's a very interesting statement piece. And at least something from Commodore. Because, I mean, the other option would be the CDTV, which is which looks like a piece of hi-fi equipment, which is kind of beautiful, but probably not really a console because it was designed to be like set-top box thing.
I mean, it depends on how you like want to define it. I mean, like the 3DO by default would be that. That's just not there because I don't think any of us have strong feelings one way or the other about how it...
No. I'll say CD32 because it's in your folder.
It's there for us to visually reference.
The controller's a bit naff, but the system itself, I like this. I like the system design.
All right, so looking at our actual list, we do apparently have 10. What are we going to put it? We're not going to do all the way through 1 through 10, but maybe try and do the top 3 so you guys don't kill me if I decide to like number the rest. It probably won't be such an issue.
Okay.
So for me, the top 3 would actually be Mega Drive 2, Xbox One X, and maybe PS4 Anniversary or Switch 2.
Well, I
say PS4 Anniversary just so it's not all black.
Yeah, I'm cool with that.
Sarah really wants it. Her SNES 3DS on top.
Not that. I just... Between the Switch 2 and the Vita...
At the moment, I say Switch 2, but like it's hard to say where I'm going to see it 10 years from now.
Yeah, like for me, like if I couldn't, and you guys are gonna make me cry on my dual screens, and that's fine. But I don't know that the Vita just just appeals to me more than the Switch 2. But
yeah,
I'm also ridiculously annoyed at all of you that you haven't put in the PAL SNES.
Put it in there, didn't I?
No, you said your top three. You said your top three.
Yeah. The top three. Yeah, it's
your top three. Are all black boxes of yeah. Well, no, they're not.
Well, no,
the but, yeah.
I mean, I'm happy for the, I have no strong feelings about the SNES design one way or the other than why did the Americans do that?
Well, we're not choosing the American one.
No, we are not.
Nobody's like, because nobody's choosing America right now, sir.
Yeah. I mean, I, like, of that, like, I could pull the Xbox out and then bump, like, move things up a notch.
No, I agree. Xbox should be in there.
Like it's the one. Like Microsoft did a lot of ugly consoles, but they got that one right.
Yeah,
they really got that one.
That
right.
One they did. I agree with that.
All right. So
is the PS4 in there purely because it's the anniversary edition, or because it's the PS4?
I mean, the PS4 looked great already, and the anniversary edition was like. That's basically like one of the few like console specific editions that actually. Looked really cool on its own merits, as well as having the nostalgia. Like it looked great in the silver.
Yeah,
less fond of that blue translucent PS4 Pro, which I didn't even bother to download. Would say a lot about last generation if we actually did have Xbox One X and a PS4.
Yeah,
one and two spot.
Yeah, it's like number one and number two is things that we recently have reviewed stuff on. No, it's fine. I'm just trying to think.
I mean, I could.
I think the Vita was
Switch 2 for Vita just because.
Yeah, I think Vita was a more interesting moment in history than Switch 2.
Yep,
would be my opinion. Definitely. Switch 2 was anticipated. Because it should have been probably what the Switch one.
More refined, grown up looking Switch, really.
Yep.
The Vita really was like taking plastic, a lot, like what a lot of the handhelds were doing, but... and they were making it a bit, you know, they did something a little bit more special with it.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
In agreement
Vita
that we're talking,
life.
We're talking like it should have.
Should have, yeah.
We're talking like the original launch Vita, not the.
OLED
LCD,
yeah.
Smaller,
yeah,
but
yeah.
Extra plasticky feeling ones that came out.
Yeah.
Right, cool, but do we have a vote for like actual number one? I think it's going to be either Mega Drive 2 or Xbox. Somehow Microsoft could actually win this, despite also having maybe the ugliest console.
I'm gonna vote Mega Drive.
I wish the buttons are also black, but I'm going to probably go Mega Drive as well, actually.
I'm going back and looking at it again. I just didn't like the controller on it. It was the only thing that just it felt weirdly boomerang. The console I loved.
Feels great though, which
yeah.
I've come around.
I think the juxtaposition of the Xbox One X and its controller are two very different.
It is a nice
ideas.
Looking controller, actually.
It's a nice looking controller, but it's in contrast to what the actual console's
machine is.
Whereas the Mega Drive, and the controller complement, the controller complements the design of the Mega Drive, would be my answer.
Right, so we're probably going to go Mega Drive, Xbox Vita as like 1, 2, 3.
Yep, that sounds good.
Yep.
Wow, congratulations, Sega. Get back in the race.
The Hedgehog will be happy.
Yes.
Will he?
Except we panned his new racing game.
Yeah, well, I said that was mostly good, just the rubber banding is a big issue.
Yeah. That's okay. We'll pretend we didn't say that. We'll wait for the review.
I mean, I haven't finished playing it yet, but this is the year where everything I've reviewed is coming on the B scale, and this is probably edging towards a B plus at the moment, but
Tim, we need a year of B scales. We really do. We can't survive in an A economy.
I would like to be playing something on the A scale, personally.
Mm. Yeah,
I got Astrobot last year. That was a treat. Or like an E scale, just because I'd enjoy writing the, like, actually depends. As long as it's not a small indie, I would probably be happy like doing the tearing down. This is partly Metacritic's fault because like the way out, because our A and A plus are both 100. So like it weighs things in ways that maybe don't let us use a full scale if you want to like consider how it's going to affect other things beyond just our own scorecards. Yeah. Anyway, Sarah, thank you for coming back again. Is there anything you have coming up that you would like to shout out?
I exist as a unhindered eventuality.
Cool. We'll see you again in episode 269.
Look, honestly, if you get me back for like, you know, 222, that'd be solid. It depends. It's a Monday night thing. We'll see how we go. But it was good to chat to you guys again. It was a lot of fun.
Yay.
Thank you for destroying my dreams.
Sorry.
You're welcome.
It's fine.
Sorry, PandyCon.
That's okay. The Vita's in there. That is a pretty good compromise. So I'm happy with that outcome.
The Vita and the Dreamcast are these two consoles that over time people have just agreed are kind of great, but never really.
Yeah.
I always loved you, Vita. I loved you from day one.
I loved it from day one as well, and I especially love the Dreamcast from day one. Although, yeah. I think the Dreamcast falls squarely in the middle of the console design thing, so it never even really came up.
Yeah.
Rob, on the other hand, there is a chance that you do have something coming up, or at least a YouTube channel.
I just got code for Pac-Man World Repack. Pac-Man World 2 Repack. Like, that just arrived today, so I'm starting that. So I guess hopefully that'll be up on the site in a couple of weeks. Video-wise for me, I've got... By the time the pod goes out, I'll have a look at Gradius Advance on GBA on my video side. The last original Gradius game to be released on a portable console. There was the teaching knowledge how to beat Gradius. Because it has a cool comprehensive training mode.
And is Rob Cap at Blue Sky, if I remember correctly?
Yeah, Rob Cap. BSky.social, yeah.
Sorry, Sarah, do you want people to be able to find you online or not?
Oh, yeah, for gold. Go for gold. Esoteric, on the Blue Sky socials. That will be probably the only place that you will find me because my artist formerly known as Twitter account is a blank hollow void.
I don't link Twitter anymore.
Don't. So, yes. So that's where you can find me on Blue Sky. You'll find me occasionally talking about some really random stuff. But most importantly... I love replying to things that people are posting. So, thumbs up.
Oh, I mean, that's what these sites are for anyway. Yeah. I guess I will probably have maybe finished writing the Sonic Racing review by the time this episode goes live. Missed out on doing another key of something that seems super interesting to me because this key came late and it's like, oh, and I only have enough time to like play one thing for review at once. I think Steve maybe grabbed that in the end. At Pretend Beard on the Blue Skies, which is probably the only social media site where you will find me saying or reposting anything. Yeah, so this is a nod. We all agree. We can all only be found on the Blue Sky.
We can only be found on the Blue Sky.
I mean, Sega won this, so it is all like just blue skies. Like,
It's the best by the sky.
Yeah.
It is. It's a pretty good image to have your company, aren't you? Like.
Oh, yeah.